Imaragai Gimbai, Biribi Barai. That means welcome friends to Biripi country, and it is on behalf of the Biripi people, the custodians of this land, I would like to pay respect to the elders, both past and present, and extend that respect to each and every one listening to King's Kids.
Hi, welcome to King's Kids, I'm Heidi. Today, Aboriginal evangelist Tony Dennison gives us more insight into where God has led him. This week, Tony shares with us on how following God's leading changed a girl's life.
There's always an adventure when you follow God's leading because you don't know where it's going to finish up. I used to be able to follow God because I'd hear God's voice, and you never know where it's going to take you, because I finished up doing a prison ministry for kids in a prison for juvenile detention center is the correct word to use. And I had two young girls with me, and we used to go into the prison every week. We used to go in on a Tuesday night, and we'd sit down and have a meal with the inmates, and then we would mix with them up until 9 p.m. at night, till their lock-up time. And we used to just be ourselves. We didn't have to pretend to be anybody else. We were just ourselves. We would sit down, talk one-on-one, or talk in a small group. And as the girls grew in confidence, they didn't need me by their side. They would just wander off, as long as they stayed in my sight. And the prison workers used to keep an eye on them as well. And they weren't allowed into cells or anything or anywhere with the inmates by themselves. And it was a mixed setting, because there was girls and boys in this juvenile detention center. I remember one of the guards saying to me one night, they had a girl that was quite difficult to handle. And they said to me, they said, Pastor, we'd like you to go into the cell. We're going to lock you in with this person because she's locked up at the moment. And we want you to see what you can do to help this girl. Anyway, unbeknownst to me, it was a bit of a setup. So when I was to go into this cell with this woman, she was to come out undressed. She was only about 15 or 16 years old. It was a setup by one of the guards. He said, I know this bloke is a Christian. He says all the right things and he does all the right things. But he said, I just want to be sure that this bloke is really what he says he is. Anyway, no sooner than I got in the cell, they locked the door. And the guard was standing outside, and the girl came out and she had nothing on. I turned away from her and I said to the guard at the door, you can let me out of here and I'm not going to talk to her till she gets the clothes on. Anyway, she went and put her clothes on. And then she came out and we started to talk. And then I shared with her, I said, because she had a very troubled teenage life, and she was a teenage girl and she fell unloved and rejected by family members. And we started to build up a rapport. So every week when I'd come in there, I'd spend at least a half an hour with this girl. When she was due to get out of prison, you know, God led me to another place where I was working in a refuge, a kids' refuge for Aboriginal kids. And while I was working there, this young girl got released from the detention centre and she actually came to live there. My rapport built with her is, you know, from being on the inside to being on the outside, and we tried to make it a natural environment for these kids when they come to the refuge. I said to her one Sunday, I said, would you like to go to church with my family on a Sunday? And she said, okay, that'd be great. So I did all the paperwork and I come and signed her out and I took her to church. And when I took her to church, she was really touched by being in the house of God with a lot of Christian people, and she was surprised how many people took an interest in her life and took an interest in her. And people were generally really, really keen to get to know her. And so for months she stayed, about a month she stayed at the refuge, and she came to church every week. But then she did something at the refuge and they kicked her out. And she had nowhere to go. And if she didn't have a place to go, she was to go back to the detention centre. So me and the wife decided, well, she can come live with us. And I said to her, well, you live in my house, you live by my rules. You go to church when we go to church. You go to bed when we say go to bed. You eat what we eat. There's no different, because I got five other kids in this house and I can't treat you any differently. So she said, okay, she agreed to those terms. Anyway, about 3 weeks after living there, she got mixed up with the young teenage boy next door. I came home from work and she wasn't sitting down at the family table. We all ate as a family. And I said, where is Leslie? And they said, she's not well enough to eat. Then she came out of the bathroom all dolled up to the nines with makeup on and everything like that. And I said to her, I said, where do you think you're going? She said, oh, I'm going out. I said, you're not going anywhere. I said, if you can't eat with us, if you're too sick to eat, then you're too sick to go out. Anyway, she called me everything and she stormed out of the place. And we made allowances because of her childhood and the way she was and coming from prison and that. Anyway, she left and she come back drunk and stoned and sat out in the footpath all night singing out, disturbing the neighbours. When I let her in about 2 o'clock in the morning, she said, you know, I'd rather be living in jail than living here. And I said, good, that suits me fine. So the next morning when she dragged us off out of bed, I had a suitcase packed for her. I put her in the car and I took her back to the jail. Anyway, I knocked on the door at the jail and I said, well, she'd rather live here than live with us as a family. So she's all yours. And, you know, the funny part was that they couldn't take her back to jail. She hadn't broken the law or done anything silly. But I just left it at the jail with the welfare officer. And I said to her, I said, when you come back and apologise for your behaviour, then you can come back and live with us. She didn't come back for about a week and a half, and she just turned up and knocked on the door. And we took her back. And then one day she said to me, she said, oh, I'm going out for the day. Can I take our youngest son with her? You know, he was about 2. She said, can I take him down to the shops and buy him something? I said, no, you can't. Normally I would let her take him anywhere, you know, but I just felt from God to say no this time because she went away and never came back. And we never heard from her for about 18 months. Anyway, we got this phone call out of the blue and it was from the Brisbane Correctional Centre. Not only had we hadn't seen her for 18 months, she was pregnant and she had a baby in prison. The prison authority said she couldn't keep the baby. Now that she had the baby, she couldn't keep the baby in prison. And she said she wanted me to take the baby. When the prison rang up, I talked that over with the wife. We prayed about it and we said, okay, we'll take the baby. Twice we went to Sydney Airport and the correctional services never turned up with the baby. And the docs officer never showed up and nobody rang us and nobody told us. We just went to the airport twice. Anyway, we're at home one day and then she knocks on the door. And she said, could you like to babysit your granddaughter? She said, I named her after Mum, she said, and I just thought she might like to look after her while I go out tonight. Funny about that, she left us with a nappy bag with clothes that didn't fit her. And she just went off, never came back. And we got this little baby with us. And I decided that year that I needed to do a welfare course. So when I went to do this welfare course, the bloke that was teaching the welfare part of my welfare course was from Docs. And he said to me, your name sounds familiar. He said, do you know this lady? And he gave me the name and I said, yes. And he said, well, you wouldn't know where her baby is, would you? I said, yeah, it's at my place. So the next day, Docs turned up with a court order to take the baby from me. And they took it out and put it in the car in the car seat. Which was their legal requirement. Then they undid the child from the car seat and brought her back in the house with a different court order, giving it to me as a legal guardian. And they said to me, how long do you want to keep her for? And so we finished up in court, and the judge gave her to me till she was 21 years old. We took that child into our home. We loved it. We treated it no different to our own kids. And we always loved her and looked after her. And when she was about 5-6 years old, she was going to the Christian school. And she was being picked on by other kids because her name was different. Because she had a different family name to Denison. And you know, she was stressing out about it. She was only 5 and 6 years old. So I talked today with the wife when we made a decision that we was going to change her name to our last name. So we formally adopted her. She's 22 now, and she has 2 children of her own. And we have 2 lovely grandchildren. You see, following God's leading, who would have thought when I went into that prison all them years ago to minister to that girl, who would have thought all them years later that I would have raised her daughter as my own, raised her and loved her and cared for her. You know, now she's 22 years old with her own two children. The joy that those grandchildren bring you, they're just unspeakable joy. That reminds me that when we come from being a non-Christian and we come into God's family, when God touches our hearts and we accept Jesus Christ as our Lord and Savior, we change and God gives us His name. And like we took that little girl and gave her our name, God gives us His name through His Son, Jesus Christ. When He comes into our heart and He changes us, when we accept Him for who He is, the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords, when we say, God, we want You to take over my life, we want You to come into my heart and we want You to lead me and guide me every day. You know, when you trust God, that's when God will change your name to His, because He'll write it on the palm of His hand.
Children again.
American 80s band The Allies come to the family. Tony is sharing how he followed God's leading, which led him and his family to have a settled life because by being a Christian, he becomes part of a bigger family, God's family. The Book of Life has all the members of the human race who would ever live from the time of Adam and Eve to the last person in history. The reason it has all the members of the human race is because Jesus Christ died on the cross and paid for all of our sins. Therefore, because of what Jesus Christ did on the cross, all members of the human race have the potential to be saved, which ultimately is God's desire. Luke 10:20 sums it all up by saying, "However, do not rejoice that the spirits submit to you, but rejoice that your names are written in heaven." Now Tony is back with the story of God's amazing intervention.
I used to be involved in a food ministry through the church, and we used to go and collect cans of food. Every week we'd go to someone's house and we'd go to a certain part of town and we'd go door knocking. And there was two young girls involved in this ministry with me. And what we used to do was we'd pick a street, we'd go knock on doors and we'd ask people just to give us a donation or one can of food or something that we can put in a hamper and meet the needs of the community. People with nothing, you know, some people couldn't live day to day or week to week. And we was able to meet that need as a church. It wasn't because we didn't get food donated to us bulk. We had to go and knock on doors in the very beginning, in the early days. We used to go door knocking. And one day we went door knocking in this block of units. And when I say by door knocking, it was difficult because there was no door on the front door. And we went to this unit. And there were three young single guys living in this unit. And they was living in fear. And when I went and knocked on the side of the door, one of the young fellas come to the door and he was terrified. And I said, "Mate, what's happened to your door?" And he said, "Well, we didn't answer it straight away because we thought you was the same guys coming back to see us because we owed money to the drug dealers. As a result of that, they've actually came and kicked our front door in and smashed our door to pieces." The young man said to me, he said, "You know, these drug dealers come and they kick the door in and they just wrecked the whole place and they gave us a flogging with baseball bats and that. And we've been living in fear and we've been terrified. And we thought you were coming back. We thought you was them actually coming back to get us. So we just don't know what to do. We're just living in fear." I just saw it as an opportunity to share God with these guys. And then I just started sharing about my faith in God and who God was and how God can protect you in all circumstances and that God can do these things and how great was God. And after an hour sharing my faith in God, I said to these guys, "You know, you got to really trust God." And they said, "Well, if we become a Christian now, if we give our hearts to God, can you guarantee that God's going to protect us and look after us?" And I said, "I'll tell you what I'm going to do with you. I said, I'm not going to pray with you today for you to become a Christian because I believe you're doing it out of fear. You're not doing it because you really believe God is who God says he is. So you just want to become a Christian because you're afraid that these guys are going to come back. But I said, you know, because I have full faith and trust in God, and I know when I speak to God and God speaks to me, I hear him clearly. And I tell you what I'm going to do with you guys. I'm actually going to pray and ask God to leave three angels in your flat, one at the door and two in the flat. And I said, this is what's going to happen. I said, for the next 3 days, nobody's going to come into the flat, but nobody's going to leave. And I'm going to leave the angels here to make sure that happens, that nobody comes in and nobody goes out. So that way, you will know at the end of 3 days, if these drug dealers don't come back and they don't get in and hurt you, that you'll know that God is as good as his word. God is going to protect you and keep you safe so that you know that I was talking about the real God and I wasn't just talking through me backside. I was telling you that God is capable of looking after you and protecting you in these things." And then when I left, one of the young girls said to me, she just let out this squeal and a bit of a scream. And I said, "You okay?" And she said, "Can't you see at the door there?" And she turned around and looked. And I looked and there was a huge angel standing in the doorway. And she said, "When you said you was going to ask God to leave three angels in the place," she said, "wow." She said, I never thought I'd see the day where I'd see an angel. And she said, and he was so big, and he was standing there, and he filled the whole doorway. And we came back in 3 days' time. These guys were amazed that nobody came in and nobody left for 3 days. We talked another hour and a half about how good God was. And when they said they wanted to give their hearts to God and become Christians, I actually knew that they was ready to receive Christ. And this time they did it because they wanted to change their lives rather than doing it out of fear. We sat and prayed with these guys and they gave their hearts to Jesus.
I will tell the world, Ray Bolts. Today we have learned that by going and committing ourselves to the Lord out of fear, we will miss the true understanding of God's love and protection over our lives. Though by giving our lives to Christ out of love, we are able to grasp and accept all that God so desperately wants to give us. In Psalms 121, verse 7 to 8, it's written, "The Lord will keep you from all harm. He will watch over your life. The Lord will watch over your coming and going both now and forevermore." That's all we have for you this week. Tony will be back next week to share more of his adventures. You've been listening to King's Kids. I'm Heidi, and don't forget to look for us on Facebook at King's Kids Ministries International. Also, Tony would love you to ring him if you need prayer on 0427 839 474. That's 0427 839 474. We look forward to seeing you next week.